Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while walking, practical projects update. And I've just got to, I've got this dog barking at me. It's actually barking at a runner late at night. It's actually weather's quite good, but I'll be walking again down to the national park. So hopefully this time I don't encounter people who are lost or bump into too many people. Now what I want to cover this time is practical projects again. So I used to give automation updates, but more or less the software is pretty stable, and I actually begin to forget a lot about the various bits and pieces of the software. So it's gone down different tracks. So the idea is that I podcast fairly constantly to sort of exercise the brain, those brain pathways to actually be able to speak. I'm supposed to be a teacher. I don't get the chance to rehabilitate in front of a class, so I'm doing this on the air. In Australia, they have radio. They used to have radio of the air, and this is shortwave radios, would link to all the remote cattle stations, and people will be educated over the air and have a two-way conversation. So this is pre-internet. So this is, there's a tradition of engagement where you're not actually standing in front of people. So that being said, I've got several things to get done at the same time. I've basically got to get, I've broken up into four sections. I've got to get a series of projects done, and the projects exercise things. I have to find things, remember things, put things in order, build circuits, learn new stuff, do new calculations. So that's good, and it is a standalone project. So when someone asks you, you can actually, rather than baffle them with, you know, quantum mechanics, you can say, this is it. This is where it's going. So there's a sort of a practical aspect to projects, and they have a sort of an inertia. You invest in them and you practice your trade as a research scientist, where you go from concept prototype to various all the ways up to a beta prototype, these different things as you go along. And it's basically you have a go putting the concepts together and just remove sections and replace them all the time as you move forward. Now there's a bit of an art to doing that. So a lot of people buy kits or have research labs. It really means that I've got a little bit of scraps of metal, tin cans and stuff like that, and I have to be really artful in putting it together. So I'll give a bit of a story about that. There's also the communication aspect, and that is the networking to actually put this forward. Now, one of the things is that you've got to, communication requires an art, and you have to actually pick up the fact that you're not, the situation isn't, you're not arriving and they expect you to do a project. So it's a rather complex idea of communication. There's obviously written communication like this podcast. Then there's the skills aspect of it. So the skills is more identified objects or associated with teaching. So I'd say skills module would be able to correct HSC exams, or a skill module would be able to go on courses, online courses, and complete those online courses. That's the skill aspect. And the fourth aspect I've come across is the health stuff. So I've got to integrate those all together. So the different ones link together, but the sort of the health ones require that I've just got to sort of push myself. It's a tough ask. The exercise bike, now I'm not on the hospital program, it's much harder for yourself during the day to actually say, oh, this is the time I'm going to do it. And so it's only when I've got the kids to bed that I say, oh, and I've got everything stable, and I want to do it, I'll do that. So there's four aspects which I'm linking together, and the projects, I've got a series of projects to go on. What typically happens is that I'll hit a block in one, then move on to the other, or get them going. Now, my sort of analysis, certain things I do remember or look up, and I'm always quite amazed to actually track down an error in a textbook or an error on the internet, because you're all looking for own errors, and you say, this doesn't add up. So I've just found an error in a really, a physics textbook, which I actually worship. And this is rather interesting because on peak health, and everything's lined up, but it's like the actual engine that you have is not completely well tuned. It hasn't got the best bits in it. So even though you're going back and revisiting it and building it not up to the scratch it is, it's not necessarily, you're back 20%, well, you've got 2% for some of the errors that you found on it. I sort of see the big revelation is that you're conducting research and wanting to get something across, and it's that working out, well, you're not in a community, you're in yourself, you've got to hit it. And people who specialise at being part of a community of research from a whole process, they look at one particular, specialise in one little area, and then they get together as a community, and it's a community that get things going. Whereas if you're individual, you have to actually look at all these sections. So I'll just talk about these sections first. There's the observational basic research. Look at something, you think about it, you read up about it. The next level is analyze. You analyze what you can do, what has been done, what is the requirement for it. And this is not coming up with it. This is with a completely open mind. You're just looking at that. Then the next level is synthesize. So a lot of people just say, want to buy a kit and just synthesize and build something off the bat. And then after you synthesize something, you've got it together at various stages. So as I've sort of mentioned before, there's a synthesis of the concept prototype, the pre-production prototype, the beta prototype, the alpha prototype, to all get it out. And the concept prototype asks these questions and is an aid for you to think, to get things together, to ask a question, how can I do this, or it's possible. So these have these different levels, so you all the way through the synthesize. After synthesizing, there's a stage of recruitment engagement where you've got the product and you're going to engage with people. Now, obviously, you have very little trading power and you have to understand that. So if you come at the wrong part and say, stop what you're doing, you've got a basic... If you don't understand people's business models, they'll give you a very short shrift that's across. So this is engagement, recruiting, and finally, execution. I mean, you can't go to execution if you haven't done those other things, or you, as I've said, have done with the automation software, hit straight on the execution, because I need the execution, the executed podcast software, so that I can broadcast podcasts with very little worry. So there's those sort of multiple dimension things, from the product, communication, skills, health level, and then in one direction, and then across in another dimension, you've got the observation, analysis. When I say synthesis, synthesis is the practical side of it, but this is putting together a plan, an action plan. That is, I call it synthesis of the plan. You assess something, then there's recruitment, and then there's execution. And you've got to keep that all in mind. And these things that, as you go up to the synthesis stage, so I'm particularly thinking in terms of the multi-scales of the universe project that I'm looking at. You see it, the prototype you have not work. People, it's just too much. If something's here, it's a different size, they just don't know it, but it allows you to restructure. So, whereas in a research organization, you'd have people from the observation analysis, synthesis, recruiting, execution, you have them all together and that communicate. You have to do it yourself. That's not, I suppose it's a bit of a sad, thing to do, but if you aren't aware that you're operating by yourself, it's very hard to do it. And you've got to be able to have enough investment in. Now, one of the things I have gone is looked at stuff, looked at what we're talking, looked at quantum mechanics, and look at the mishmash and the way that people plug one culture into a science, which is a different plug size, is just basically push the plug in, it doesn't fit, and they make things up and they get angry, and there's all this palaver of one of the things, because it's not work. I put it the opposite way. People say people aren't teaching well because there's all this not I suppose corruption, but inside there's nepotism, all this type of stuff, all happening, and they can't teach well. Well, I think the opposite, there may be another flow, that because we're not teaching well, it means that if you're not doing the right thing, you've got to actually flip the opposite way around. I hope this is okay, but someone's left a very nice pram and baby seat out, so what's probably happened is that someone's put that out, put it off the side, things just go driven home, and they'll be just cacking themselves. So I'm walking to the National Park, and part of it is walking at a slightly higher speed, so I'll lose less time, but gain greater fitness time. Okay, so you've got all that stuff going across, so with that knowledge, it's sort of a bit of a depth. So when things don't necessarily go your way, it's there. So the understanding of it is that I want to do the Einstein to Haas pendulum. And this is a material which is non-magnetic, but is attracted to a magnet. That is, it magnetizes. It has randomly arranged electrons, but with a magnetic field, they align. It's bloody possum. G'day, mate. But there's certain types of wildlife we have in abundance. This is water dragons. They're absolutely everywhere nowadays. Something you're used to, and possums. Okay. So the idea is that this material, be it soft iron or ferrite. So ferrite's got a whole heap of things which are very attractive. Ferrite can switch really quickly. Okay, and if you can get an electronic state switch, you can switch, and it's got a lower density, so it may not have as much oomph, but it's also got less mass for the oomph. It's it's sort of an interesting aspect of it. So you put it in a magnetic field, and if you slam it with a magnetic field, it'll twist a little. And then you've done that, and if you can store that twist in some sort of pendulum, obviously a torsional pendulum, because it's a torsional push, you'll want to do it and you'll be able to observe it. So if you have something set up like this, which people can see and all this type of stuff, I'm just beginning to think, now I'm building it up to the stage, it's harder for people to see. I might put a little web camera in there so people can actually have a gander about what's inside. When they first sort of put this together, when the first electrons were discovered, it wasn't too long before, say, electrons was discovered in 1900, 1899, around that time. It wasn't too long before people said, well, hang on, we should be able to do this magnetic field effect. They had the actual theory wrong. The theory became far more interesting when it came along. And it's one of the real tour de forces that they managed to get here. And they sort of went there with a torsion effect. I'll use a torsion pendulum. I don't have solid-state electronics. Has got 60 years or 50 years to be invented, and 100 years before it's pathetically cheap. Yeah. So $4... $4 isn't their time. So, to get things, you have this, instead of the internet, they had a whole army of suppliers and network, on the ground network. So if you wanted something in a lab, you'd have a lab person to build exactly your design. Exactly. And those people would source, and these specialist people would come build it. This is different now, we've got the internet. So you've got this design, and this pendulum oscillates, and the thing is, I went sort of pretty much straight down that design with dreadful things, where I selected something, it didn't work, it then been told back. So the first thing I did was I had to reverse the current, so I used a relay, and this worked fantastically for its time. It just swung that pendulum all over, and hopefully there's a pretty nifty spider hanging around the place. So at night here, if there's no wind, particularly you get these spiders building webs. So if you walk on a big path, it's fairly good. It's where you walk on a bush path and the trees come a certain distance together. You have to have a stick out in front of you. And I'll tell you what, the actual, it's, the art is not having a heavy stick. Because a heavy stick will knock it down and knock the web on top of you. A light stick, especially these cross sticks, light sticks, so you'll hear the, you'll feel, you'll, the haptic will come back to you, and you know to, it stops it before you, come into it. It's similar to, well, I don't know, I think the world has changed. This is with drip wires. You have a twig hanging off your rifle, and you can sort of pick it up if you're lucky. And of course, I don't think anyone would use tripwire. They'd use capacitive sensors, you know, the whole palaver. Now there's all this type of stuff's gone. Okay, getting back to this De Haas thing. So the really first thing is to build, you've got something which is radially symmetric, and you've got sitting down the barrel of a solenoid field, and it's a responsive magnet, and it devises logic how it can oscillate. Now, it can oscillate on various methods. It can start to rotate on various methods if it's built incredibly badly, which is for sure the way that I first did it. So I built it incredibly badly. This mechanical relay was going tick, 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 and then the piece of rubber, you can imagine, rubber is sort of just, it's a shock absorber. Rubber is a shock absorber. It absorbs, dissipates energy. So, yeah, you can actually get some soft rubber and various ways to hold it up. Pretty much the, I think the thing was building a reasonably good pendulum, and I just had this absolutely crap material, and I used clothes pegs to hold the pendulum in place, which got this nice magnetic dipole, and began to actually, that oscillated beautifully, but because it was the magnetic dipole, and I was actually building a compass, which would orient it to the north pole, and then I flip the polarity of the compass over, and then it would spin around to the other one. I was very happy with the pegs, then threw them away, and then moved to annular ferrules beads, ferrite beads, and buy a pack of them. And because they're what they are, you just glue as many together as you want to get an arbitrary length of them. Pretty easy, and it's machined, and to precision glue them, you sit them in your 80-20 rod, so they sit in the groove there, beautiful. To link it together, you get a magnet to glue it all, and then the art of getting the fiber right down the centre. I found these shock absorbers for fishing, which you would squeeze in, and you could put it in the centre, rotate it to, glue it in with a bit of super glue, then epoxy, that's in, and start to build some really good low-loss torsion things, getting up to a Q, say so rubber, you have a Q of four oscillations, but, is that right? No, Q of 10, something like that, it's like two oscillations before it got to halfway, then the thing with this is that your Q, which is the number of oscillations that you can get, you give something a tap and it will ring down. Now, the number of oscillations that goes from full to halfway, so you bend it and it does say 90 degrees, by the time it's sweeping out 45 degrees, number of oscillations, you get that, times 4.53 gives you the actual, so I'm just going to check here, because there's nothing, I'm recording, nothing worse than actually giving a podcast, and it's, it's nothing, or you record something and it's your machine, you haven't switched it off, and it's recording you do on a bushwhack where you're just going, fuck, oh, this is hard. Okay, getting back to it. So, here, going up, and you're going torsion spindle. This removes it, and then you realize there are certain things that the ferrite will actually move to the edge of your solenoid because the field is stronger there, and so you can, it's a bit hard to go, but so you can, if you have wonky switching, wonky a poorly constrained what is it? A torsion pendulum, but a bit like a pendulum. It's poor. It's all poor. It's going to be, and it's also in a dipole, and it's also the Earth. You're going to pick up absolutely everything. So the big doodah was to go to solid state, and my initial thing was solid state switching, and then I sort of got the $4.50. That's how much it costs to get a bank of four solid state relays in. Sort of like it switched and switched state on because it's zero crossing. So they switch when you give the command and the voltage crosses zero. That's it's a two-part switch. And for DC, it's a nightmare. And you're going, oh hell, how am I going to do this? Doing up a few diagrams and saying, oh, and you look, and it's something called an H-bridge, which is sort of a solid-state diode. So a solid-state switch is PNPN. PNPN. It's a four-state something, so when the current flows in and the current flows through, it actually powers itself on. It's sort of like all-in-one one hit, solid-state rectifier, all this beautiful stuff, but really AC. So the DC version of it is something called an H-bridge, and what do I need? I need a H-bridge for driving a stepper motor and driving DC motor, and then it all comes out. So, and then this is the other thing is that I've switched over to Arduino because the documentation's there. You can't get the actual components. The board that you buy from JCAR, thank you very much, is just an embarrassment. You know, it's just solid state vomit. And now this is interesting because I had my son's 555 counter and built from JCAR, and that was the stuff they were teaching, really 30 years old at my school. My son, and of course he didn't pick it up. And what now happens is that the idea of a solid state component which you can put in is, and solder in, it's sort of gone. It took a little while for that to go. Just sort of like, there's no, you open up a kit and it says, this is a kit from 30 years ago. It's not going to be well documented. The information is going to be very hard to, you don't pick that up and you think you're rehabbing. You're just trying to get back. So it's now Arduino, and I submit Arduino is, I'd say, 10 years out of date. I think it is for hobbyists, enthusiasts, people who want to switch on a light bulb or something like that. But it's like, it's got a sort of slightly lower price point than Raspberry Pi. So Arduino is a chip, and the chip is programmable by a serial port. Okay, and this would make sense. It hadn't been that the actual computer chips have come down, and your Raspberry Pi is, rather than plugging the serial port, you plug in a mouse, a keyboard, and a monitor. Yeah, you know, you really get into it, and it's got some read write in it. So I'll have to get up on Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi obviously doesn't necessarily have the shields and all this type of stuff, but I bought a shield, the cheapest shield, and it had a buzzer, and so it was a shield built for a project, okay, where you needed a buzzer and proximity sensors, and so someone had a project and they built a Pacific shield for it, and they just put it out without documentation, but it does have the DC motor drives, which is the obviously you'd have a three-wheeler and motor to the left and motor to the right, and you can reverse the one and left one and forward the right one to get it to spin. So this is ideal. I put it up there, and putting a 24-volt 3.3-amp power supply, and it began to sort of squeal a bit. You basically have, and you can't. To modulate the motor, they pulse with modulator. It's just a rather sad thing overall. So I had to go down to 12 volts, and then the chip is rated up to 50 volts, and this and this, and of course you can buy, it's actually cheaper, a board, it's $8, something like that, and that has the little chip, which is everything on it now, which is then off board onto a heatsink, and obviously you can do that. And so I will in steps go up there, and this is the way. So once the solid state is going, you no longer had the thing moving about the place, and I had to do it. And it was an actual fact in a podcast that I began, well, it's hard to say, I did the sort of basic rule of thumb equations and sent it off to a professor, and he said, oh, why don't you look at this material? And I did look at this material, and it's got one good feature, and it's basically ideal for a rocket. If you want probably ideal for bungee jumping, quite honestly, because it can extend for, it's not elastic though, so I don't know exactly what sort of ideas which use this polyurethane optical fibre, but as I did it, I did basic calculations and saying, well, at least this material I could, I know how it's done, it could ask for a very thin walled tube and stuff like that. And then, I don't know how it did it, I then moved it away from a torsion pendulum to a top and bottom pendulum. When I say top and bottom, there's a fair fraction of weight, say 40% of the weight is above the pivot point, 60% of the weight below the pivot point. So effectively you've reduced the inertial the gravitational force by a fraction. So you can actually drop this in and get a very high rotation rate for this and support it. And so I began the process of converting this to a vertical, so a horizontal mount. And obviously a horizontal mount, because it's supported on both ends like a suspension bridge, it means that everything can start to shrink down. So from taking up a box size, the actual guts of it is like the bowl of the cereal size, so you can get that down. And so the big thing is the oscillation. You've got now, it's no longer a torsion thing, so you don't have the loss of the torsion wire, that is the springiness of the wire, the quality of the material of the wire, where the wire's coating and the anchoring. You don't have those points. You do have the point that you have to actually anchor it, and ideally, how is this done? I'm doing something unusual. So if you imagine I have a long tube, aspect ratio 1 to 10, that's 1 centimeter across, 10 centimeters long, or 9 millimeters across, 90 millimeters long, and so I put this on its side and then suspend it, not on the center, but slightly off center, or because it's a tube, I suspend it from its inner tube so it can now spin back and forth. And this is showing some promise. So I had to get some points, because this is ceramic, so it's really hard. So that's already a material, so you have two hard materials together. And I started off with razor blades, and the razor blades are flat contact, and if you have them off axis, the whole thing begins to walk after a while. And because they're rigid, the vibrations go whoop, straight up and jump. But this is beginning to show some promise. So from a queue of 150, it starts to show promise, but it's unstable. So the queue varies, the oscillation varies, it walks over the place. So replace the blades with the points of electrical probes. They're sharp and high. And again, this can jump and walk around the place. So, you know, how do I do that? And then I don't quite know how I did it, but if you you can actually change the oscillation speed by this following process. So you have a piece of nylon fiber. This, I don't know, it's less than, but it's probably 100 micron across fiber, across, and it's suspending. Now, the thing is that if it is just stuck there, it rubs and does a torque on it, and it's all a bit lossy. So, I came up with this, I think I've got three beads, and I can now hold the bead on a little ferrite magnet, on a metal ruler, then line up bead one and bead three, and displace bead two a millimetre across, and then put a fibre, and then super glue this together, so it goes in a sort of V shape or upside down V hat shape, and the fibre goes behind through it. Now, what you have is that the fibre is now held not on the surface, which is crap, but on the intersection of the two inner circles, the inner circles of one and two and three. If you can imagine a Venn diagram, that the point of the intersection. So it holds up there. Beautiful. And then, this started, now, I must admit, the thing before this is that I said, oh, it's gonna be sharp. So just before this, I went from, something sharper and stronger than the points, and these are fish hooks. So I've got two little fish hooks, and I have to get rid of them because they're bloody dangerous for kids, that's one thing. But they're also dangerous for me because I can bleed like anything, so it's sort of a bit of a sweat putting this across. And the fish hooks were fantastic because you could see all the vibrations go through it and it would be good, except the fish hooks would do the same walking and it wouldn't, you'd leave it on overnight and the frequency would change. And you're getting up to, I don't know, Qs of 400. And now as the Q increases, the resonant frequency would hit, starts to drop down, and I'm at the moment now that I've got to the nearest millisecond. The nearest millisecond per second is actually beginning to be not good enough as I go across. Now this is an iron fiber, you stretch it across, and I had bought to hold my fishing hoods hooks a hinge. The hinge you bolt together with stainless steel screws. Clamps your fishing hook. It's at the right position. Holds it up rather nicely. Fits in rather a nice little thing. And this is nice. This is now you put the mirror. All right. So the mirror is a piece of overhead transparency plastic, and the art is that you cannot touch, handle this. You can't leave the fingerprint, it's gone. Super glue meats that all go waffly. It's awful. So in order to do it, you have to sort of cut it and cut your finger holding thing. And so you put it in, hold it by finger, push it in, and then you just twist your finger hole off and it leaves the little thing there. So you've got a sort of light little reflection there and the laser to come in. And but to do this, I fortunately had purchased, oh my god, I'm going down this gorge, and I had just gone, it's sort of S stakes down. I convinced myself had done the last S, but I've got another S and it's just going to be absolute agony going up here. Okay. And I've got to really push myself, keep on losing weight. I'm putting myself on starvation diet, or I think starvation diet, just a small breakfast. Really, what did I have for lunch? Oh, like a quarter of a cup of rice for lunch. But I'm still back on the kilo. So we started at the soldiers meeting, like they bring out chips, and I only had a few chips too. Blood oath. So it's good there. So I've got this fibre across, and it turns out the stainless steel screws I went fit in the 80-20 rather neatly, so I put those posts up, tied up, and there's a process of windlass the, put it through, put the fibre through, and you can tell, you tap it, and it doesn't stop oscillating anytime soon. Like, you go away, make a cup of tea, come back, it's still oscillating. So you can get very high Q. Now I put this in, this process, and then I said, "Well, I'm going to upscale it, because I've got to put it." So I've got a chlorine bucket, which is this square 10 kilo chlorine bucket. Cut holes in it. Now I can't use a knife, so I use soldering iron, and you to put holes in it, individual holes, and then come across the holes, and then push across the holes, and it pops out a little window for the laser to go in. So this is the 74 cent laser. Now the amazing thing about the 74 cent laser, you look at the back of it, and you can see through to the lens it's going through. And what's this about? Well, the laser is so small, it's actually just a nothing. It's an incredible thing. So you put the laser there, and then hot melt glue on your 80-20, hot melt glue on your stuff, and then I put it in. I went to move it, and I knocked and knocked this over, so I had to start again building this. It takes about 10 minutes to build one of these things. And then I put it back in, and the performance was pretty, all over the place. And you can see it. And of course, what I had to do is get in and super glue the nylon string in. That's in. So what happens is that you get the nylon fiber, and you pull it up, pull it tight, and when it's there, you have it winding in around 10 times your post. I still haven't got this absolutely perfect. It's about 5 millimeters difference between the two posts. And then when it's in, you super glue it, the super glue goes in, locks in after a while, you hope. And this is the entire thing. And then going on, it's beautiful. It goes in, works really beautifully well, and I just have to go. So now, the reason you put it in a chlorine bucket is it's got everything's fixed, and there's a Lazy Susan for $5 you can buy for Kmart, and I'll put that on the underneath, which will allow you to just rotate that bucket, and then I'll up, just progressively upgrade the little thing, and we'll get it. So, and at the moment, it's the best performance ever. Now, one of the things is that yes, I can magnetically shield it, but if you, you know, I'm going to magnetically shield it. Well, you hold a fairly powerful magnet around it. Now, what could be happening is that if it's not the effect, you could have essentially a magnetic field which is north at the top and south at the side, north and south, a local magnetic field disturbance, and this means it's moved away from a torsion pendulum to a torsion sensitive torsion driven standard pendulum. It's like a standard pendulum with a few extras to make it nice and light and small. So this is working unbelievably well. But what you could have is that you could have at the top of your thing a north field and at the bottom a south field. And when it flips such that it's north and north, it pushes away. And when it flips to south and south, it pulls together. And that could, in this case, cause your oscillation. Now, to test this, I actually put in a something like this, and indeed, if you do that, it does increase the oscillation. So we sort of know that. So what's happening is that I've the one thing is that torsion's a standard torsion pendulum that Einstein used is, if you can hear me going up, I've turned around, I'm going up. Normally I'll wait for a little while, but I've got to really push through this. So you get your torsion pendulum. So where is this north-south going through? So eventually you start to remove everything and you introduce it, and you see it is sensitive, but you know, it's nothing, you know, what the heck is it about? And so you could put field compensations in it. And so this is why you want it put it in a bucket, so you can rotate it. You've got to put it in a bit better and rotate it. And, so I've started to vibration isolate it. And so, ideally, if it's something, you can, have something that has to, be maximum at one, say at 0 degrees, and then a maximum gain at 180 degrees, but because of symmetry, it has to be pi and two out of phase. And, but what I'm seeing at the moment is that, it's not sensitive to that. There's no angle. So putting on this Lazy Susan, which I'll buy tomorrow for $5, and then, gotta get in copper wire and upgrade it to, 24 volts, 3 amps. So it's 1 amps, 3.3 amps. It'll be 3 times the strength of the magnetic field, but I'll, also more coils. So the magnetic field will be 5 times, the strength. Is this, I'm going to have to put heat sinks to get the heat out of it. So it's already, the coil heats up to 80 degrees with 12 watts. And so I basically have to put a heat sink in. And the thing is that heat sinks have got something like, you know, 10 watts a degree. So if your heat sink is 10 degrees up, you got 100 watts, you know, ideally. Okay. But as if it's connected properly to it. It's designing your heat sinks to take this out and a bit more stale. And it's looking as if I'm up to the stage where it's showing a massive effect, much better. So there are deceptive things. So so it's a really small effect. So this is a highly massive effect that I'm seeing. So it's just getting it up to a point. So no matter what I do with the magnetic shield, I've got to get it reliable. And so I switch it on in its bucket, glowing away there. And while it's oscillating like bejesus, I don't have to put investment into small angle oscillations. I have to do that once I've eliminated what's going. But now here we have the reason, the question of why is this oscillating if it's not the Einstein effect. But fact is, solid state's allowing me to go possibly 100 times faster than the oscillation. So 100 times faster just is the pace of doing things and sitting and analysing what's to go on is there. Then the pendulum is double constrained, vibration reduced, sensitive. So it's really focused on picking up the Einstein de Haas effect. And then the beam shoots straight up onto the ceiling. So there's no getting around and find the beam where it shoots across the room, as I did before. Have it going across straight up to the ceiling. So I should be able to just film it and go now with this configuration, which is sort of like the Olympic rings, or like two Olympic rings, and the fibre up in the cut between it. That's getting up to 500-600 Q. You know, it's up there now. Fish hooks were getting close, but they weren't reliable. And it was really good because you could you could just move your chair, vibrations would go through, and the fish hooks are so fine that the little pendulum would rock back and forth high frequency, so you'd see a little wiggle in your back and forth laser line, which goes back and forth. And so that's there. So hopefully this will be an ultra stable effect, and it's probably about the maximum Q I can get around away with. So it's now got a half oscillation time of 107 microseconds. So 108 and 106 are lower. 109, 105 beats. So you get a feeling for the high Q that you're dealing with. Now, I can then tune that Q a little bit more by raising and lowering it in the solenoid, because effectively there's a force of gravity. The field gradient increases as you go down, and you can change the effective weight if you really want to do it. But you're really getting onto the edge here, and if you're gluing, you've got nylon, notorious for water absorption and all that type of stuff. just means it's got to be some sort of algorithm down there. And so that really gives the example of the research effect. And so when you I knocked on Sydney University's door, I think before Christmas, and said, look, let's start these projects, I've identified these things, can I speak to someone? Yeah. And these people, look, practically we're too busy to speak to you, we've got students, blah, 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 or very much. And the bottom line is you can stop with the resource list now. I don't know how they'll take to this next section, because I really do need some peer review as I go forward. But the thing is that door's a bit stiff, it's open, but there's a bit of response when you put equations, but in general there's no response to it. But the Science Teachers Association, I should be able to give a paper on that, which is down at the skills section, that is presenting your scientific work. And yep, so as this goes off, perhaps the next cab of the rank. So this is enormously successful, the next cab of the rank. So I've also got the Thompson experiment. That looks as though it's working. But I have the problem of sorry, getting a heat source, and I don't know whether I should get in some small bit of Nichrom wire. Might be, you know, at the end of the day, the best. It's got to be thermally conducting, but not electrically conducting. It's trying to think, there's a electrically conducting ceramic. Was it lutetium borate, or whatever it is? But I really need a ceramic bead, which I heat the bejesus up of. So I've got to work out how I do it. So there's that. I really have to keep on pushing away. So as you see, the health stuff is slowly pushing up. The communication and skills, I just have to. So as it stands, I can't be helped, because the institution have said we're not interested, and you just can't then say, well, they're not interested, the institution's got a problem. You've got to come up with a viable, systematic solution to get back in. Now, we don't, the fact with, about whether I can actually fight to get back in, get going, I really don't know the answer to that. But it's like any battle, or any, I suppose, war or something like that. The issue is, what is it? There's a bad guy making sure you have a horrible day. That's another day of the office in the army. But also, you've got the problem of it does matter. You may not win, and if you don't win, it's going to go backwards. So, and you may be in a position where it seems hopeless, but you've got to keep on keying forward. So sorry for this discussion. My breath. I'm now out of the gorge, and there's a car creeping out of this area. But not as a Tuesday night. Yeah. So it's the integrated approach seems diluted in that I'm doing a bit of research, doing a bit of analysis, doing a bit of synthesizing, putting it together, and I'm doing all those. Oh crap! Sorry, it looks as though there's a headlight, but it's just the national park, LED information sign. I've got to do that recruitment aspect of it in that sort of matrix, and you've got to keep on hopping. So there's the observation, the analysis is what we do know, what the benefit is, what the risk is. This is the Einstein de Haas experiment. That analysis, and so the synthesis is coming across. The synthesis feeds back into the analysis, feeds back into the whole series of things in the observation. And it's sort of like a whole process engine, and not everything starts up. So I'm not calling the press and saying I want to execute, and then all of this. You send out emails of progress, you get no response, but that is from intelligence. You know, sort of like the typical thing is putting confounding intelligence out there, or you'd leave a food parcel or something like that which is high value. It's a bit like the rats and rat poisons. You can see if they pick them up or not. You sort of know, then you, when you know your patrol, once you do that, when you patrol, you see something of high value, you leave it, you know it, leave it there and don't touch it. So this is sort of a similar theme in terms of you progressing to a high value and, getting no feedback. That sort of tells you to actually tone it down and actually get it up to a value. In terms of, there must be an assumption that you can't do it, or the actual understanding is so complex people can't really get it instantly, that just means that you can walk across and actually start to do things on that recruitment stage. So a lot of, so like I'm thinking for this, by having a bucket you can take in the train and sit there and just plug it into electricity and switch it on, you can sort of show what's going on, get it very analyze very, very quickly. But essentially it will be anathema, for this, for this to happen. There's a similar thing in terms of, scales product, the scales, idea, scales of the universe. Changing from logarithmics to B and S for bigger and smaller, and 12 or a number times, and then eventually a hang on name. So that's where I'm up to. That you put in front of the adjective of that. So and this is by just hammering away and seeing that people really comprehend, people in your path forward cannot comprehend basic maths. And what it is, what is the scale of something? It's beyond them to see. I suppose if you are in an organization and you can pick who you talk to and you can sort of channel information in your organizational community, but if you're there by yourself, you have to really innovate. And so what I've done is for the model of the sun, I'm calling it Tiny Sun. And for the model of Alpha Centauri, I'm calling that Tiny Alpha Centauri. And the Earth is a tiny galaxy. And it's just, it's sort of like Barbie, times this one word for it. And to get some of these ideas across is really, really difficult. But that's a process where you're going through the recruitment or the exposure or the build-up phase. So that's separate from the execution phase. You want to build up, have a conversation. And as you see that, you can actually maneuver. And it's been a while to actually move some of these ideas tiny. So once I've got the word tiny, you sort of say, well, how dumb are you? But you realize that it's not, it's like typical research. It's not, ultimately, you get into such a field, a rarefied field, you're not competing with anyone. You're actually only competing against yourself because there's no one else out there doing it. So it's taking me a fair number of goes to do it, but and that's in the structure. So I'm beginning to we'll go in and re-edit the assets for it with the word tiny. So instead of Earth, I'll have tiny star sites. Buckheath, Bubba, Avoca Beach, this place in Japan and stuff like that. And I'm sort of beginning to understand that people have this very limited bandwidth to take any ideas. And if you're not expected, you've got really nothing. You can just get a bit of noise and get it up. And so for the really complex stuff, you have to go and push it, sort of develop, incubate it a hell of a lot of way and actually get a small audience, say like the Science Teachers Association, what you're doing. And essentially, as I said before, I think the actual issue is not that bad teaching is a symptom of these people who do work out how to get from point A to point B without actually teaching, without actually getting the facts across. That's not the symptom. The symptom of getting from A to B without getting the facts across, a symptom of that is this people who, well, they're not skilled in that. They have to become skilled in the other things, that they lose confidence in integrity. So if we don't have integrity in what we're teaching, you just can't have someone who's just naturally, if they've got no integrity in what they, the depth of their understanding and going through, they it seems a very unlikely story, and indeed it is a fallacy that it's also very interesting in that the schooling system operates from point A to point B in a series of ceremonies, and the ceremony is built up such that they actually award a degree. So it's a ceremonial thing, and then there's, so that's the ceremonies aspect of it, the qualifications aspect of it, and the other processes go across. So now the problem with this is that people who get in the attend enough ceremonies get into the mentality, a ceremonial way of thinking, that we have to do this because this is how the ceremony will operate. I know this because I went through that ceremony, and it's actually because what you're teaching is should change and should vary in complexity, but the actual stamp is the same. It's sort of like a computer memory address. It's called a handle or something like that. You name for a certain area of a computer, get the memory off, and so people, I think there's this fundamental confusion of this, I don't know, how did you actually say it? It's this ceremonial way of thinking, where it's actually, there's several degrees in which you're actually moved across, and the end of the story is that you can't appeal with integrity and logic to a system which doesn't operate on integrity and logic. However, what you have to do is actually start to build an integrity and logic thing, entire system, which is sort of designed to the fact that you've got certain bridges blown up for you, that you're on your own. And this is, I suppose, the gathering it all together, getting all the resources in line, thing at this high level is really your MBA officer thing. In terms of day one, you've got to start a business, right? You've got a bit of market analysis, you come up with your market plan, and eventually you have a policy for how, a returns policy, a marketing policy. You have all these things come together and they build over a large point in time, and you have to do it all in parallel, and this is your startup mode. Now, the thing is that these startup people get things going, and people who have more experience, they push them off, and these people move out. So it's a normal thing for people who can think in a complex way, and you know, typically the startup person is driven by a vision, and the vision is the structure which everything is linked together. There's that knowledge, and that becomes your reference. So what essentially happens is that the people with the founder and the vision provide the basic sort of start culture, start of the thing to progress, and then it gets replaced. But now you can't actually have a startup person operate within a huge bureaucracy, because they're analysing what's been said to them. Because that's how they've been trained. and so, or they can say, look, if we continue to do this, this is not going to be productive. So if I don't come up with a broad strategy, I don't have the complete strategy there, the strategic elements there, or the strategic thought there, to actually drive and integrate projects and outcomes, which hopefully will build up. And so when we reach a particular point in time, I'll have so many projects, so much communication ability, so many skills under the belt, so much health going above, and I should be at a point where I can be tapped and go ahead. Now the interesting thing for me in terms of that, I sort of think in terms of numbers, where I'm up to, like I feel perhaps 50%, I'm getting up to 55%, and perhaps I felt a bit like I can get up to 70%, and these numbers, these will be what you need to perform on a day-to-day basis. So people for the hospital can get by with 40% and institutional support. You know, they make mistakes and everything's held, they're given training. If you're not like that, 70% is still not going to be good enough. However, that's better to be at 70% than be, sort of like you're I'm looking here, a car in a car yard, and they've said, we're never going to sell it. It's not part of our range. We're not going to maintenance it. And we're not going to drive it. We're not going to turn on the engine and stuff like that. And, it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then if they put effort in and the car drives away, they will say, well, the tires are bald. It can't do it. It's sort of that negative process. Now, the thing is that sort of the dire cast of the negative process, I've really got to go. And I suppose what strikes me is that objectively you go off on these harebrained projects, and you say you're you know, this is basically technically impossible to get there. But the process of going forward is that you discover Arduino, you discover different ways ways forward. So that's a fundamental research thing. You can see them going hell for leather, building this axis at this station. So, just let's hope that this DAS experiment, it'll be really interesting when I get the $5 Lazy Susan Spice turntable, glue it underneath, and allow me to rotate the little bucket. If it doesn't go through a zero, I mean, ideally, let's say that the you should be able to rotate it, go through a maximum and two zeros, ideally, you should be able to plot those two zeros and infer a shift of those two zeros. Two zeros shouldn't be precisely 180 degrees out if you're going for a very low value. The bottom line is, at the moment, it doesn't look to be going to a zero whatsoever. So that would imply that the actual source of magnetism is actually rotating with the frame. Or, I'm really stupid and I'm making something which actually oscillates and swings, and it's sort of a bit hard to actually see how that happens, because everything is extremely linear, and you're symmetrical. So how on earth does it happen? It could well be that I've even measured the currents in and out. Both sides are fairly precise. This H-bridge, is identical. The components are identical for the H-bridge. So current down there. It's looking so really head scratching. How is this oscillating so much? What is going on? Have I indeed cracked half a dozen problems and actually achieved something, or is there something that we really don't understand? And I have to actually dive in and estimate the number of I've tried to estimate the you've got to measure certain things like the Q of this type of thing, the Q, the force, the angular force, the number of electrons, the pulse rate. I'm pretty sure that I'm getting, a few factors of 10 in there, except, and I've sort of moved away around a few things, and if it is, I've probably struck gold, but I don't necessarily think it's so. Well, that's all I can say for the night on these projects, and I'll send this to my brother, who's also a strategy analyst. That is, so in your three parts, your observation, analysis, synthesis of strategy, putting it together and selling it. There's that point where you sit across those two points and analyze the strategies. You can come up with a strategy, but you've got to actually come up with a suite of strategies and counter strategies and try and work out what's going on. So obviously the changing thing which people don't have access to, there's people who have connections and power, and they can have a strategy of who they tell and how they run meetings, which is, I suppose, HR strategy, but I don't know how long that goes. But ultimately, we're living in an age of technology strategy. That is, what I can do is defined by the technology. And to sort of to understand the difference, I have lasers, I have computers. I have solid state stuff. It can actually start to move me into a different direction. And, not necessarily deductive, I think this might be it, that a lot of people, think of a strategy analysis as a deductive process. I know this, I have this actionable intelligence, I've seen that person walk this direction, I know that he would be losing money for doing it, so he must have a reason for walking of it, and that's a very deductive reason, whereas a technology strategy requires technology know-how, questions, and basically inductive process, which is the sort of the scientific process coming forward. And again, and this goes at all different levels, and again, the inductive process is not whack and do an experiment. You've got to do a whole series of things of gradually building up the experimental conditions, the understanding of it. And so if you look at this as an overview, I'm doing this, of gradually forming a strategic, a meta-strategic model, and having the luxury of just building building assets on it, and being able to sit back and say, well, I can achieve, you know, these various things. I'll get back home and actually see whether my Einstein to Hass pendulum is still true. So I leave it on for a few hours and see if there's any change in the amplitude, the frequency. So the it may, I don't know, it's going to be very hard for it to do it. It may stretch, become a bit more slack with time, or things may vary, temperature may vary, and ultimately it would be good to have something to switch on, especially because it's now it's in one position. I'll be able to data analyzer. This, I suppose, makes me a bit sad because I really wonder how what the iMac cards are, the iMac software. So to do easy data analysis, you really need LabVIEW iMac Vision, and the data cards are a bit woeful. So there's something I'll have to get back in doing it, but nonetheless, you want something which is stable. So when I get back, I'll just have a look, and I'll get my wife, hopefully, a hot chocolate, and we'll hit the sack. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.